All right, everyone, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Pei Hei, 85. We are starting on Pei Dalid Amud Beis. So we left off Bei Nesia. Thank you. So it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. Pei Dalid Amud Beis. A lot to do today. The Bei Nesia Tavas Amsa Diasmi Misimta. So let's remember again. Thank you. Remember again that we were talking about the interesting machlokas Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon about the ability to go ahead and seize property, a creditor seizing property after, a creditor seizing property after the death of the debtor. So we discussed again the halachic parameters for going ahead and doing so. So what happens? So the Gemara tells a story. So people of the house of the Nasi, so they seized a maidservant from orphans in a simta. Now remember, so the Bei Nesi apparently is the creditor. The guy who died was the debtor. So the creditor sees this maidservant as a form of payment in the simta. Now, I also remember again, we spoke about the simta yesterday. Simta is technically speaking part of Rishus HaRabim. But Lemaisa, again, it's a little bit removed. So it has almost like a quasi-status of a Rishus, but kind of like between Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim. So they seized the maidservant in the Simta. Yosef Rabbi Avar, Bichanina Bar Pavi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, Yosef Rabbi Abba Gabai, who is supposed to say all these Rabbanim are sitting and adjudicating this case, and Rabbi Abba is there. Amr Lahu, Shapir Tafis Tuha. So they said to the Bei Nesia, good job, Shkayach, you're entitled to seize it. Amr Lahu Rabbi Abba, Mishum de Bei Nesia Ninu, Machni Fasalahu. So because they're members of the house of the Nasi, so Machni Fasal, you're engaging in Khanifa, meaning you're flattering them unnecessarily, you're telling them that what they did is correct, when in fact it's not. Vahadun Dainik Rabbi Tarfon. Yet again, we learned this yesterday. There was a case where Dayan and Paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. Vahadre Reish Lakish of the Menayu. And remember again, Reish Lakish made them retract the ruling and Paskin like Rabbi Akiva. So you see from here that we don't pass like Rabbi Tarfon, that people, that a creditor can't just seize property from orphans after the death of the debtor. The only time that property could be seized is when, at least according to Rabbi Akiva, during the lifetime of the debtor. But once the debtor dies, ultimately that property becomes the property of the orphans and the creditor may not seize it. Yema bar chosha av amasik beizuzi bahu gavra. This was another story. Now, a lot of stories today. So Yema bar choshu, he lent money to a guy. Shachiv v'shavik arva. So what happened? So the guy died and he left behind a boat. Now, you're going to see, it's not a, don't get excited, it's not like a yacht. He left behind, it pretty much sounds like a rowboat. So he left behind a boat. So Yena Bar Chashu says to his shaliach, he says to his agent, listen, go get the boat for me. Go get the boat for me, right? Because again, Lemais, again, he was saying, seize the boat in satisfaction of my debt. Azal Tafsua, Azal Tafsua. So what happens? The shaliach goes on behalf of Yena Bar Chashu to seize the boat. Pagu be Rapapa Rafuna Beri Davi Shavu. So listen to this. So Rapapa Navi Yoshua and Rafuna encounter the shaliach. Amri lei at tofes lebalcho b'makom shechav lacherim. They said to the shaliach of Yemar Bar Choshu, you can't do that because you are seizing property in a place where someone owed money to others. Now, let's analyze this for just a moment. If you have a situation ultimately where a creditor, where a debtor owes money to multiple people, there's a concept of tofes lebalcho b'makom shechav lacherim. In that type of situation, so let's say this Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are all owed money by the same person. So a third party can't come and seize that property on behalf of one of the creditors, because by doing so, he's depriving the other creditors of the ability to receive repayment. The only people who have the right to seize property under certain circumstances are the creditors themselves. So therefore, again, Rav Papa and Rav Huna say to this shaliach of Yemar Bar Choshu, what right do you have to go ahead and seize this boat on behalf of Yemar Bar Choshu? You're depriving other creditors of their ability to get payment. Now, Bosai, as we're going to find out in just a moment, the other creditors are actually Rav Papa and Rav Huna themselves. So Rav Papa and Rav Huna see the shaliach of Yemar Bar Choshu taking the boat, and they say, you can't do that. So listen to this. So Va'ab Rabbi Yochanan HaTovis, Rabbi Yochanan said that if a third party seizes for one of the creditors in a place where the balchov, the debtor, is chayiv to a bunch of people, top of pehe, lo kana, you did not acquire it. So therefore, what happens? The shaliach hears this from Rav Papa and Rav Huna, and the shaliach backs away. So what happens? Tafsua inhu, Rav Papa and Rav Huna grabbed the boat. They grabbed the boat. What happened? So we'll say, so here's the issue. So Rapapa, Mimlach Maluche, so Rapapa got in the boat and he's rowing it. That's the way he's acquiring it. Rav Huna Bar Rav Yehoshua, Mimmatach Le Ba'ashla, and Rav Huna Bar Rav Yehoshua is leading the boat on the banks of the river with a rope. He's pulling it. So one of them is rowing, one of them is pulling. Both are trying to acquire the same boat. Mar Amar Anakanina Lo Kula. Umar Amar Anakanina Lukula. Everybody will say it sounds like Shnaim Oksum Batalis, right? Right. So this one says, I've acquired the boat. This one says, I've acquired the boat. Paga Bahu Rav Pinchas Bar Ami. So we'll say, Rav Pinchas Bar Ami sees what's going on. Amar Luhu, Rav Ushmol Demetar Bayu, Vahushet Siburin Umunach Abishusarabim. So first of all, Rav Pinchas Bar Ami said, you both have a big problem because, again, the only way you could acquire property of a debtor is how? Is if it was in Rosh Sarabim. Because the Maaseh, if it's not Rosh Sarabim, then what? It automatically becomes a property of the Yisomim when the debtor dies. So therefore, again, so we'll say it's interesting. So Rav Pinchas Bar Ami made the assumption that this boat was on the bank of the river. That's where they got it from. And that's why. And therefore, again, that's not called Rosh Sarabim. If to which case the Gemara says, Omer luhu ana nami mecharifusa dinara tafisna. They said the truth is we did not get, this boat was not in the bank of the river. Literally it means we actually seized it from the swift current of the river, meaning that apparently the boat, I guess, was, I don't know, parked, docked, not at the bank of the river, but rather again in the middle of the river, and therefore that's where they got it. Therefore, again, I will say that is like Rosh Hasharabim. So the Gemara says, the Gemara goes weiter. Also the Kamei Rava. So I will say, obviously, Rav Papa and Rav Huna have this machlokes about who is going to go ahead and actually own the boat. So how do we decide this case? So they come before Rava. Amalhu Rava said, Kakoi Chiyuri, you white geese. Now I will say, now listen, now Rashi says over here, Kakoi is of Zim Chiyuri Aj Zakenu Hayu. Now the white part, is because they were old. So the idea of the geese, you'll see why in just a moment. Mishalchi galimi de'inshi. You're stealing the clothing off people. The same way that the geese go ahead and peck at everything and take everything, you are stealing literally things from people. You're taking the cloak off a person. Hachi Amrav Nachman, Vahusha Tafsu Michaim, because it both says we've established before that yes, you have the ability if a creditor sees that he's not getting repaid. He has the ability to seize property, to seize assets from the debtor. And I will say, obviously, that's a very general statement. There are ways and there are circumstances in which that is permitted. But even if you accept that that process is a permitted process, it only applies when the creditor himself is alive. That's when you could seize property. But if the creditor is not alive, you may not seize property because those assets become the assets of the Yisomim. Now, both sides, now there is a way for creditors to get payment from the assets of Yisomim, but it requires going to Beis Din. Very often it requires taking a shvua as well, but it's just straight out seizure of property and satisfaction of a debt doesn't apply. Therefore, Rava says to them, you guys are both wrong. Because again, the whole seizure itself is an illegal seizure, because Lamaisa, again, the debtor is already dead. Avimi, prayed Rabbi Avau, have a maski bil zuzei bechozai. Let's listen to this. So Avimi, the son of Rabbi Avau, lent money, right? Or I should say, Larry, lent money to people in Bechozoi. So what, excuse me, he borrowed money, I'm sorry. He borrowed money from people in Bechozoi. Listen to this case. Shadrinu biyad chama b'rei diraba barabua. So he sent he borrowed $1,000. He sent the money back in the hands of Chama. So Chama was to deliver the money to the people of Bechozoi. Listen to this. Azal parinu. So Chama paid back the money on behalf of Avimi. Amarlehu havu li shtara. So Chama said to them, listen, give me back the loan document, right? You're supposed to remember, if you loan someone money, so the creditor is the one who retains the loan document because that's his proof that he's owed money. So Chama pays the money back on Avimi's behalf, and then Chama says, can you please give me the document? Give me back the shtar. So Amrulei, sitroi ninhu. So listen to Sobo says, in the way Chazai, they told Chama, no, we're not giving you back the shtar. Because the money you paid us, that was in satisfaction of another debt. Avimi had borrowed two amounts of money from us. One of them was recorded in the document, one of them wasn't recorded in the document. So the money you just paid back was the one that wasn't recorded in the document. He still owes us for the loan recorded in the document. Okay. So we'll say, so now Chama comes back to Avimi, tells Avimi what happened. Also, so Avimi calls these creditors from Beit Chozoi to Beis Din in front of Rabbi Avo, and Rabbi Avo says the following: Amrle is luchos sahadi de paris sinhu. So he says to Avimi, do you have witnesses that you even paid back the people of Beit Chozoi altogether? Meaning, were there witnesses when Chama came to repay the money? Amrle lo. To which Avimi said, no, there are no witnesses that I paid back any monies. So Rabbi Avo says, Amarle, Miko di cholin lomar lo hayud varam me olam, yacholin lami la meymar sitrai ninhu. Well, say, listen to this. So Rabbi Avo says, this is very interesting. Technically speaking, the people of Beit Chozoi, they have a Migo. What's the Migo, Rabbi Osai? They could claim, lo hayud varam me olam. They could claim, nothing ever happened. Right? Because also, remember, why could they claim nothing ever happened? Meaning, they could claim, you never repaid us anything. Why could they claim that? Because there were no witnesses. So since they could technically claim, you never paid us at all, therefore, again, Rabbi Osai, they are believed to say that the monies that were paid were in satisfaction of another debt and are not credited towards the debt that is recorded in the shtar. Very interesting. So the Gemara says, since they could have technically said there was no repayment at all, since there are no witnesses to the transaction, therefore they are therefore believed to say that no, the monies were paid, but they were repaid in satisfaction of a different debt. So now the Gemara asks something very interesting. The inyan shalumi shaliach mai. So what's they say? Watch this. So now the question is, does Avimi have some type of recourse against Chama? See, remember, Avimi gave the money to Chama to pay back the debt in Beit Chozoi. Chama gave back the money and only asked for the shtar afterwards. What the Gemara is suggesting is he should have really done what? Should have asked for the shtar first and then given the money afterwards. So does Avimi have any recourse against Chama? So the Gemara says, Amar Avashi, Chazinon, I Amar Le Shakol Shtar of Ahavzuze, Mishalim. So we'll say everything depends on the instructions that Avimi gave to Chama. If Avimi told Chama explicitly, get the document first and then pay the money, which Rabbi Osai would make sense. You'd want to get the document before you go in and you give any money. So give it to a third party. Give it to a third party. He doesn't have to give it directly to the creditor, right? Meaning there are ways that you can make sure that you get the document back before you go out and you give the money. So if that's what Avimi told Chama explicitly, then Havzuzi Mishalim Havzuzi. Excuse me. Then Amarle Shakol Shtar of a Havzuzi Mishalim. Then Enachinami. Then Chama would have been responsible if the instructions were explicit. First get the document and then pay the money, then Einachinami, if Chama deviated from the instructions of the Mishaleach, of the agent, then Chama, the Shaliach, would be liable. However, if Avimi just said, have Zuzi v'shakol shtara, but if he just said, get the money, or I should say, give the money and then get the document, then lo Mishalim, then Lema'is, again, the Shaliach would not be obligated to pay, because he didn't deviate. V'lohi, Elimar, in reality, this distinction is not true. Benkach u'benkach mishalim. So I say, actually, interestingly enough, the Gemara says that it's not true. Rather, again, the shaliach is at fault regardless. Can't win. The amrle, why? Because lemaisa, the mishaliach, the mishaliach, in this case, Avimi, could say to Chama, litakune shedartich avalo lavusi. I sent you for my benefit. I did not send you for my detriment. Therefore, I will say, the Gemara seems to say that in a case like this, where there is a certain element of negligence, because just common sense says that you have to make sure to take some type of proactive step to ensure that you're going to get back that document, and the shaliach did not do that, that there is shaliach liability in a case like this.
Is there a similar taina that the shaliach should have when he gave over?
It's possible, correct. That could be part of the negligence as well. Absolutely. Although, again, remember, getting back the shtar obviates the need for Edim. I only need Edim in this case. The only reason Edim even came up is because the people of Beit Chozoi, could claim that there was not even payment. So normally I don't care about Edim. All I need is that shtar back. Says the Gemara, Hahi Isasa Dahave Mifkede Gaba Meluga Dishtari. This is another interesting case. There was a woman There was a man who deposited like a case filled with loan documents with a particular woman. Meaning there was a man who loaned a lot of money. He was owed a lot of money. And he had like a briefcase filled with these documents. And he deposited it with a particular woman that she should watch it for him. So what happened? So we'll say, so now he died. If you look at Rashi over here, Rashi is Meluga Dishtari. tik male shtaros. It was a case filled with shtaros. So we'll say, so what happened? Asu yarshim katavile. So what happened? So the guy died. The yarshim show up and they say to the woman, we want our father's case of loan documents back. So amar lahu nechayin tafsinah. So we'll say, listen to this. So she says, well, look, your father owed me money, and therefore I am keeping these documents in satisfaction of the debt that he owes me. Oh, and by the way, I didn't seize this after he died. I seized this before he died. So this is what we call a tfisa mechayim, a seizure of property in satisfaction of a debt during the lifetime of the debtor, which Rabbi Yosef established does work. So asalikah made Rav Nachman. So Rabbi Yosef, the Yisomim brought this lady before Rav Nachman, Beis Din. Amar la islacha sadi titavua minach mechayim. Now, again, remember, in this kind of case, where the father actively deposited this property, these documents, with the woman, in order for her to really claim that she seized the documents, she would have to prove that what? That he demanded those documents back, and what? And she said no. So Rav Nachman says to her, the fact that you have them is not a raya because he deposited them with you. The question is, do you have witnesses that know that he wanted them back? And you said, no, I'm seizing this in satisfaction of the debt. Amar lei, lo. So she said to him, no, I don't have witnesses like that. Amar lei, im kein, havi tfisa de la achramisa, u tfisa de la achramisa lo klomi. To which Rabbi Nachman responded, well, if that's the case, if you have no witnesses that he ever wanted it back during his lifetime, and you said no, then this is the equivalent of a post-death seizure, which of course is illegal, and therefore you must give it back to the Yisomim. The Gemara goes weiter. Hahi isisa v'chayva shvua beidina d'reva. So we'll say there was a particular woman that became chayeves in the shvua. She had to take a shvua. Rashi says, shaya adam tov am mamon v'hikol feres. It was a situation where a man said that she owed him money, and she said, no, I don't. So therefore she had to take a shvua to back up her claim. So what happened? Amrle Bas Rav Chista. Let's listen to this. So the daughter of Rav Chista said to Rava, and I will say the daughter of Rav Chista is Rava's wife. So the daughter of Rav Chista said to Rava, meaning Rava's wife said to him, Yadana be dechashuda ashvua. I know that this woman, she swears falsely. I know about her that she swears falsely. Therefore, again, don't administer a shvua to her because she'll swear, but she has no problem swearing falsely. So what Rava says, so what do you do in that kind of case? Afcha Rava l'shvua akashikenegda. So let's say, well, when we get to Masech Shavuos, we'll see this as a concept that if you have two people and one of them has to take a shvua because they have a machlokes, so if the person who's supposed to take the shvua is chashra l'shvua, a person who swears falsely, we could do a shvua flip. We could impose the shvua on the other party to go ahead and get the other party to take a shvua that their claim is true. So in this case over here, where Rava's wife is telling him this woman is a liar, she'll swear falsely, so Rava flipped the shvua onto the other party. Zimnin hava yasi kamidra papa v'rav adar ben asna. I see Ahu Shtara Gabe. So we'll say one time, they were sitting before Rav Papa, and Rav Adar Bar Masna brought this particular Shtar, Shtar Gabe. Amar Lei Rav Papa, Yadana Beid the Shtar Prius. So let's listen to this. So Rav Papa said to Rava, I know that this Shtar has already been paid. I know that it's been paid. So Amar Lei, Iki in the Shachrina Bahadeh, Dimar. So let's listen to this. So Rava says, okay. So Rava says to Rav Papa, thank you for that testimony. Do you have another witness? Right? Meaning you're an Eid Echad. Twitch Rav Papa said no, it's only I know it. So Twitch Rav responded, I'm sorry, you know, even though you're saying this, you're only one witness. And one witness is not enough to go out and create the halachic reality. So what's Rav Adar Bar Masna sitting there? He says, Rav, really? Is Rav Papa not as trustworthy as your wife? Meaning, you believed your wife when she said that don't let that woman swear because she's a liar. And yet, again, based on her testimony, her word, one person, you flipped the shvua. Is Rav Papa not trustworthy as well that you can't believe when he says the shtar is repaid? Rav say, listen to this. What did Rav respond? He says, Rav Bas Rav Chista Kimli Bigava Mar Lo Kimli Bigave. To which Rava responded, I know my wife. I don't really know you. As he says to that papa, I know my wife. My wife is a very trustworthy lady, right? I know who she is, so I could trust her when she says something to that papa. No offense, man, but I don't know you, right? Right? You're a papa, you're great, but I don't have, he's not saying I don't trust you. He's just saying for me to rely halachically on your word and to be able to adjudicate a case based on that, I have to know you personally. I know of you, I know of your reputation, but I don't know who you are. So I'm going to pop up, Hashta da Amar Mar Kimli Begave Milsihi. Now, listen, something very important comes from this, which is that we see from here that Lamaisa, you can rely on the word of one person if you know that individual to be exceptionally trustworthy. Gemara says, Hashta da Amar Mar Kimli Begava Milsihi. Now that we know that your ability to trust in someone is halachically significant, Kigon Abba Bar Kigon Abba Mar Bari de Kimle Begave Karana Shtara Apume. So therefore again, Rav Papa says that therefore someone like Abba Marbury, so just like Abba, who I know to be trustworthy, I would tear up a shtar based on his words. As the Gemara says, Karana, you would tear up a shtar based on his words. Rather, what it means is that Rav Papa is giving an example. If Mar were to tell me that such a shtar has been repaid or there's some kind of problem with the shtar, I would believe Mar. And I'm also saying that this is actually a very important halachic principle, which we'll get into much more in the Babas. Everything comes up in the Babas, apparently. But the idea over here is that if someone shows up in a Beis Din, who the Dayanim know to be an exceptionally trustworthy individual, obviously I'm also saying it's not going to work in capital cases, but in certain financial cases, certain monetary disputes, the testimony of one person who everyone knows to be an upright and honest person absolutely carries some level of halachic weight. The Gemara goes weiter. So it's another case. There was a particular woman who became chayevus and she had to take a shvua in the basin of Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. Suppose say same type of situation. Someone claimed she owed money. She said she didn't own money, and therefore she had to take a shvua that she really didn't owe money. And this is all happening in the basin of Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. Amar lehu hahu baldin. So what happens? So the Baldin, meaning the litigant, said to Rav Bibi, if you don't mind, could we do a switch, a change of venue? Could we move this case to our hometown? Apparently, Abosai, the person was claiming the money, and the woman who was denying the claim are both from the same town. So the man says, could we move this case to our hometown? Because I think if she's forced to take a shvua in our hometown around people whom she knows, she'll be embarrassed to lie. Here she doesn't know anyone, so she's going to lie. But at home where she knows people, she's not going to want to lie. After the mechsefa umoja, she'll be embarrassed and she'll admit that she owes the money. So the woman agrees with one condition. Amar lehu, kisvu li zakusa. So she said, I'll go on one condition. I want you to write the document, the Zachusa. Rashi says, Shabasi ladin v'neftarti men b'shuasi. And I will say, so apparently what would happen is, if let's say this prostitute were to go through Shur to take the Shvua that she doesn't owe the money, so what would happen? Beis Din would write up a document. You know, Plonis showed up in Beis Din. It was claimed that she owed money. She took a Shvua that she doesn't owe the money, and therefore she is free and clear from this claim. So she said, I'll go to my hometown, but I want you to write the document, my quote-unquote exoneration document, my Shvua document. I want you to write it now. You don't have to give it to me, but I want you to write it now, and I want you to send it with someone to my hometown. This way, I don't have to come schlep back here to get my document of exoneration. So Amalu Rabbi Barabai Kisvula. So Rabbi Barabai said, fine, listen, we'll write it now. Don't give it to her until she actually swears, but we'll write it now. Amar Rav Papi Mishum Da'asis. So listen to this, Rav Osai. So that's Rav Bibi. So Rav Papi is not happy with this. Amar Rav Papi Mishum Da'asisu Mimulai Armisu Mili Mulisa. Because you come from truncated people, you say truncated words. Rav Osai, and this is quite a shtach, because Rav Bibi, Rashi points out, was a descendant of Eli HaKohen. Remember, again, there was a curse upon the family of Eli HaKohen that the male members of Eli died at a young age, with, of course, certain exceptions. Those who engaged in Torah and Chesed lived longer lives. But in general, the male members of the house of Eli died at a young age. So Rav Papi kind of gives it back to Rav Bibi, and he says, because you come from truncated people, you say truncated things, meaning why are you saying something so foolish? Ha'amarava, hayasharta d'dani d'michtava mikamei d'nachvu sahadiyach asima sadayhu psula. Remember our sharta d'dani? We had this in Yevamos. So also, what's a shaita d'daini? Shaita d'daini means that if somebody shows up with a shtar in Beis Din, just because someone shows up with a shtar doesn't automatically mean that we believe what's written in the shtar. Rather, again, you need what was called kiyum shtaros, where you have witnesses that come forward, especially if we don't recognize the signatures of the witnesses, you have witnesses that come forward to validate the witnesses who signed on the shtar, or to validate the shtar itself. Now, I both say, so what happens if Beis Din wants to save a little bit of time and proactively write a document of Kiyum Shtaros? You can't do that. You can't do that. Why can't you do that? Alma Mechse Kishikra. Because we'll say, you can't write that something occurred when something did not yet occur. It looks like a lie. Even though Abbas says it's a time-saving mechanism, be good to have these documents already ready and drafted, you can't do it because it looks inappropriate. If Beis Din is writing about things that occurred that did not yet occur, so to over here, to proactively write the document that the woman swore, and therefore again we exonerate her from the claim, and to write that now, and to send it with her to her hometown, so that once she does it, she's going to have it. That's not appropriate. So the Gemara says, "Valesa," but in reality, it's not true. Why? Midrav Nachman, the Rav Nachman, Omer Hayy Rabbi Meir, I feel the matzah ba ashba v'chasmo v'nasdan l'kasher. So Rabbi Meir held that, we'll say, if a man found a get in the garbage dump, and it happened to be that it had the same name as his name, same name as his wife's name. Mamish, this must be a simon from Shamayim, right? That here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me this get with all the right information, and he signs and he gives it. Avinas Nala, kosher. Va'afilu Rav Nachman lo pligi alei Rabbi Meir ela begitei noshim. So we'll say, even the Rabbanan who argue in Rabbi Meir, they only argue why? Because they hold that a get, all parts of the get, must be written in the Shema. However, Aval b'shar shtaros modile. But Rabbi said, apparently for other shtaros, they would agree that such a shtar is usable. So what do you see from here? That even a shtar written in advance of the actual event is kosher. To which the Gemara says, Aval b'shar shtaros modile. The Amar Avasi, Amar Rav Yochanan, shtar shalav abo parab oparo. We'll say that Rabbi Yochanan said, if you have a shtar bosa that you drew up, a loan document, and the document was already paid, the loan was already paid, so you cannot go back and lend money with that same document. Why? Because the lien of the document has already been forgiven. Time of the Nimchal Shibudo. The reason you can't go ahead and use that loan document again is because the Shibud, the lien, has already been forgiven. Aval Mechse Keshikra Amadeis Lo Chashina. But I will say, what do you see? That we're not concerned with Mechse Keshikra. We're not concerned with the fact that to use a pre-drafted document or to use a document drafted before the transaction looks like a lie. So we'll say, therefore again, we're kind of back to square one. That Lamaisa, again, it would appear, we're not back to square one. What we end off with, Rabbi says, is essentially a fundamental machlokes about whether or not we're choshesh, are we concerned from mechse kishikra or not? And again, are we concerned with the drafting of certain documents that makes it look like a falsehood? In other words, that what the real fundamental machlokes is, are we comfortable with proactively drafting documents that we will not hand over to anyone until they become a reality? So are we comfortable with that? Or do we say the act of committing to writing that a particular event occurred when it did not yet occur is in and of itself appears like a falsehood, and therefore we want to stay free and clear from that. So that in and of itself is a fundamental machlokes. Are we choshesh from mechse keshikra or not? And again, the nafkamina will be in these type of cases, are we comfortable proactively drafting a document, not giving it into the hands of the parties until the actual events unfold, but at least knowing that it's ready to go. Fundamental machlokes as well after choshesh for that. Another case. Hu gavra, listen to this. Hu gavra, da'afkid shav marganisa de'tzari bisadina bei rabbi mi'asha bar bered rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Listen to this. There was a man who left 7 pearls that were wrapped up in a garment, in a piece of material, in the house of Rabbi Mi'asha, the son of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Okay, fine. Shachar Rabbi Mi'asha v'lo pocket. Supposedly, here's the problem. Rabbi Mi'asha died, and he left absolutely no instructions about what to do with those pearls. Not do with the pearls. So what happened? Also, look at me, Rabbi Yami. So they came from Rabbi Yami. Now, what's the issue over here? So the owners of the pearls come and say, we want our pearls back. The Yisomim say, listen, we don't know the status of these pearls. We don't know, were those pearls our father's, or were those pearls yours? We just don't know. So they're coming up for Rabbi Yami to try to adjudicate the case. Listen to this, Rabbi. So Rabbi Yami says, Chada, Diadana, Beib, Rabbi Mi'asha, Barbed, Rabbi Yoshua, Ben Levi, Delo Amid. First of all, 7 pearls is expensive. It's a lot of money.
So Rabbi Ami says, I know that Rabbi Miyasha was not wealthy. So that's number one. That is highly unlikely that these pearls actually belong to Rabbi Miyasha, because Rabbi Miyasha was not a man of means at all. Va'od ha'kayav simna. Now, both saying one of the parts that the Gemara does not say explicitly, but it's understood from here, is that when the Yisumim came, you can't just say, give me back the pearls. What do you have to give? You have to give a simon. So the Yisumim gave, excuse me, not the Yisumim, I'm sorry, this other party who came to claim the pearls, they gave a simon about the pearls. Whatever, the pearls are like this, they look like this, it has this mark, whatever it is. So Rabbi Ami said, when you put these two things together, number one, that we have like circumstantial evidence that it's not Rabbi Miyasha's, because Rabbi Miyasha was not wealthy, that's number one. Number two, the other party claiming that the pearls are theirs are giving a simon about the pearls. You put those two things together, and he ordered the children of Rabbi Miyasha to give the pearls to the third party. So the Gemara says, however, the Gemara qualifies this. V'lo Amran, now this idea that they gave a simon, that only is legitimate when d'lo ragil da'ail v'nafik lahasam. Ava ragil da'ail v'nafik lahasam ema ina shachrina afkid v'iu mechazi chaza. So we'll say, this is in general, by the way. So when is a simon significant? A simon is only significant if these people were not regulars in Rabbi Miyasha's home. But if they are regulars in Rabbi Miyasha's home, it's possible that what? It's possible that they saw the pearls. And if they saw the pearls, that's how they know the simon. Therefore, again, the fact that they can give a simon would be no raya of ownership. So it's only if they are people who were not frequent, who did not frequent Rabbi Miyasha's home, then the giving over of the simon is indeed a valid proof of their ownership. Another case. Ho gavra de afkid kasa de kasa bechasa. So we'll say what happened. There was a man who deposited a silver cup in the house of chasa. Chasa is the person. Shachiv chasa velo pocket. So we'll say what happened. Chasa died and he left no instructions about the silver cup. So the problem now is that the Yisomim, the children of chasa, don't know what to do with the cup. And we'll say again, now I want to be clear. So I want to be clear. So what's happening in this case is, remember, they're just not sure. Remember, they're not necessarily claiming that this is our father's. Remember, their father just never said anything about it. So I'll say, so what happens? Also, the Kamid Rav Nachman. They come before Rav Nachman to adjudicate the case. Amar Lahu. So first of all, he says Yedana Bay Bechasa Delo Amit. So number one, Chasa wasn't wealthy, and apparently they both said this was a very expensive silver cup. So number one, again, we have circumstantial proof that it's not Chasa's, because Chasa wasn't a wealthy man. Va'od Hakayav Simna. And both say again, same thing. The people who were claiming the cup was theirs were coming along and giving a simon about the nature of the cup. But again, the Gemara qualifies this. When is a simon significant? A simon is only significant if these were people who did not frequent the house of Chasa. But if they came in and out of Chasa's home, I can say that the cup belongs to someone else. And they just happen to see it, therefore they're able to give the simon. So we'll say, so same thing. We have a coupling again of the circumstantial piece that Lamaisa Chasa is not wealthy. Therefore, again, it's highly unlikely that he owned this item, coupled with the fact that what? That the people who are claiming that it's theirs are giving a simon, and as long as they were not people who frequented the house of Chasa, that simon is significant. Mitachsa be Ravdimi Achua Drav Safra. So we'll say, now there was an individual who deposited, again, Mitachsa. Mitachsa, as she says, is lavush meshi, a silken garment. So he deposited an expensive silken garment at the house of Ravdimi. Shachiv Ravdimi v'lo pocket. They both say the same thing. Ravdimi died and did not give instructions about what to do with the silken garment. Also, the kameh, Rabbi Abba. So they came before Rabbi Abba to adjudicate the case. So the shaila is, whose is it? Amar lo chada di adanabe b'Ravdimi d'lo amit. So first of all, Rabbi Abba said, listen, I know Rav Dimi was not wealthy. This is an expensive linen garment. It's highly unlikely that he would have owned such a garment. Furthermore, va'od ha'kayoiv simana. Furthermore, the people coming to claim the garment as their own are giving a simon about the garment. Velo, but again, same thing, but a simon is only significant when velo amran ela delo ragil da'il v'nafik lahasam. But again, a simon is only significant if these are people that did not frequent the house.
of Rav Dimi, aval ragil da'al benafik lahasam, but if they would come in and out of the home of Rav Dimi, then ema ina shachrina afkid, then I could say that in fact the silken garment belonged to someone else, v'ihu mechze chaza, and he just simply saw the object, and that's why he's able to give this simanim. Suppose I say same thing. Hahud amalu, hahud, I will say, so now another case.
Maybe it was collateral. Maybe someone put it with him as a collateral and he owed.
Yeah, except no one's claiming that. No, meaning we don't have to think about possibilities that nobody's claiming. Right? As far as we're concerned over here, there is a party that's claiming it's ours.
Right.
It's ours.
Maybe they owed the guy money and.
But you can't start, if you're going to start inventing possibilities, then lemaisa in ladavar sof. I don't have to invent anything over here. Here, as far as we're concerned, there's two possibilities. Either A, that it belongs to the party who has it, or B, someone is actively claiming it. Right? Meaning if somebody's actively claiming it, to then go in and halachically say, well, maybe it's this, you can't do that. You can't invent possibilities. So the possibilities are in front of us now. Somebody's claiming that it's theirs. Or the other possibility is the person in possession of it is really the person who owns it. So in all of these cases, where again, remember, I'll say the advantage in all of these cases is you have circumstantial evidence that the Dayan knew that these individuals were not wealthy. These objects were of considerable value. So that's already strike one, that most probably the person in possession didn't own it. Couple that then with the fact that someone else is actively claiming it and is able to give simanim about the object, all of that points in the same direction that indeed the property belongs to the party that is claiming it. Another case we'll say, Hahud Amar Luhu Nechase Letuvia. Another interesting case. A guy says on his deathbed, right, I want to give all of my property to Tuvia. Okay, I want to give all my property to Tuvia. Shachiv asa Tuvia. Suppose this is what happens. He dies, and a guy named Tuvia shows up, right? So what happens? I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Hare ba Tuvia. Tuvia's here. Tuvia has arrived. Okay, I mean, what are we supposed to do? The guy said, give my property to Tuvia. And he didn't give any other identifying information. Guy named Tuvia shows up. I guess he's the recipient of the property. So the Gemara says, Amar Tuvia, listen to this. Amar Tuvia, va'asa Rav Tuvia. We'll say, what happens if the guy said from his deathbed, I want to give my property to Tuvia. And what happens? Rabbi Tuvia shows up. So he's not just regular Tuvia, he's Rabbi Tuvia. So the Gemara says, so Latuvia Amar, Lerav Tuvia Lo Amar. So I'll say, so again, that's not good. Why? Because he said he granted his property to Tuvia and not to Rav Tuvia. Meaning, if he meant to give it to Rabbi Tuvia, he would have said, I want to give it to Rabbi Tuvia. V'i inish to Gisbe, ha Gisbe. However, again, if this was a person who was on a very familiar terms with Rav Tuvia, then it's quite possible that what? That he would have referred to him by his first name without his title. So therefore, again, if he was close with Rav Tuvia, so close that he called him Tuvia, then even if Rav Tuvia shows up, we'd give Rav Tuvia the property. So what happens? Asu Shnei Tuvia. So say, what happens if two guys named Tuvia show up? So the Gemara says, so it depends. Shachin v'talmid chacham. So let's analyze this. If one of them is a neighbor and one of them is a talmid chacham kodem, then we assume that he wanted to give it to the Talmud Chacham. Now the logic behind that, Rashi says over here, is Talmud Chacham kodem, demistama adam matzik masav lizok lizchus b'shas misa. So the idea over here is, we learn actually in Rashi quotes in Kesubis, in Brachas, that there's an incredible zechus of allowing a Talmud Chacham to benefit from your property. So therefore, we assume that if this is a deathbed gift, that he wants to do something that is going to be a zechus for him. Therefore, Rabosa, he's going in and he's giving it to a Talmud Chacham. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, calling a viim lo nisnavu ela mahana tamidi chachamin nechasu. Rabosa, it's very important you sowed of ultimately, again, sharing our wealth with tamidi chachamim. It's an incredible zechus for the person who's giving. So therefore, we assume the guy's on his deathbed. He wants a zechus. He's giving it to the Tuvia, the Talmud Chacham. However, again, Karov Talmud Chacham. I will say, what happens if with two Tuvias, one of the Tuvias was related to him, one of the Tuvias was a Talmud Chacham? Again, Talmud Chacham Kodem. We assume that he's giving it to the Talmud Chacham. Ibarilu, I will say, what about the following case? Shachin v'karov. Let's say two Tuvias show up. One is a neighbor Tuvia, and one is a relative Tuvia. Not a relative Tuvia. A relative who is named Tuvia. So I'll say, so who do we give it to in that case? Listen to this. My Tashma. Listen, I will say, this is actually quite amazing. So from Mishlei, Tov Shachin Karov Me'ach Rachok. A close neighbor is better than a distant relative. Mm-hmm. Meaning that Abosai, if ultimately he has a closer relationship with the neighbor than he does with his relative, then we assume that he's giving it to the one with whom he has the closer relationship. What happens, however, Shneim Krovim, Shneim Shcheinim, Shneim Chachamim? So let's say, so what happens if both of the Tuvias who show up are on the same level? They're both Tamidi Chachamim, or they're both close friends, or they're both neighbors. I mean, let's, Rosa says, easier to decide on the case where one Tuvia is this and one Tuvia is this, we give it to the closer Tuvia, or the Tamid Chacham Tuvia. What happens if they're both on the same level? Tamar gives a very interesting answer. Shuda de Daini. Rabbi says, Shuda de Daini means we leave it to the judges. Shuda literally means an evaluation. Rashi says, Shuda de Daini, Hatolas Hadayonim, if you mash Yiru Dayonim, Shayadarko Shalmais, Likare Veze Yoser Mize, O Misha Vishnaim Tov Venoig Bidarak Yeshara, Shishlamabon is Kavin Ames Lazokos. So Shuda de Daini, Rabbi says, means we leave it to judicial discretion. We ask the judge to examine the case, to do the investigation, and to see, based on prior relationships, which person do we think the deceased meant. And we'll say, obviously, at the end of the day, Shuda de Daini means that we're going to leave it in the hands of the judges to ultimately decide, because based on the information we know, we can't make an objective decision. Because both Tuvias are on the same level, therefore Shuda de Daini, the judges will decide. All right, we'll say, no, actually, let's do one more line. I'm really Rav Lebre, to Rabbi Avin Bar Avin. Ta'im lecha milsa mal yusa, da'amar. Actually, no, boss, we're going to stop over here. We'll pick up a Mirat Hashem with Amrli Rava Lebrei. Five lines, six lines up from the bottom, Mirat Hashem tomorrow. Shkoyach.